When Mark was sent out an SOS regarding someone preaching today, and he said he was going to be gone for 3 days this week, I just assumed he was off on a study leave or a spiritual retreat. And here today, I find out he was out in the ranch falling off horses. So anyway, there are a couple of changes I want to make. I want to use the parable of the 10 bridesmaids. So if you're reading from the scriptures, it's Matthew 25, verses 1 through 13. And the title I want to give to this sermon is Timing is Everything. For those who like to know this sort of thing, this is the first of the last three parables of Jesus that Matthew gives us prior to Matthew's account of Jesus' passion. So people who read the scriptures some try to get every angle, to try to understand, is there some import to the way this is put and where it's located? So this may be more important than we sometimes think. Jesus said, then the kingdom of heaven will be like this. 10 bridesmaids took their lamps and went to meet the bridegroom. 5 of them were foolish and 5 were wise. When the foolish took their lamps, they took no oil with them, but the wise took flasks of oil with their lamps. As the bridegroom was delayed, all of them became drowsy and slept. But at midnight, there was a shout, "Look, here comes the bridegroom. Come out to meet him." Then all those bridesmaids got up and trimmed their lamps. The foolish said to the wise, "Give us some of your oil, for our lamps are going out." But the wise replied, "No, there will not be enough for you and for us. You'd better go to the dealers and buy some for yourselves." And while they went to buy it, the bridegroom came and those who were ready with him into the wedding banquet, and the door was shut. Later, the other bridesmaids came also, saying, "Lord, open to us." But he replied, "Truly, I tell you, I do not know you. Keep awake, therefore, for you know neither the day nor the hour." How much time do we have? Sometimes the choir wants to know that before the sermon starts. Sometimes the congregation wants to know that. That's a rhetorical question, of course, this morning, still an important one, often asked. How much time left to finish the test? How much time until we know if the news will be good or bad? How long until the dull ache in our life will be healed? How long until we discover the unquenchable joy in life? Jesus' parable this morning tells of some who let the time get away from them. The story is grounded in the wedding customs of Jesus' time and culture, first century Palestine. This event, the wedding procession referred to in the parable, was the last of three steps in the marriage of a couple. The first step was the engagement arranged between the fathers of the bride and the groom. Next was the betrothal, at which time the couple exchanged vows, and the man made payments to the father of the bride and presented her with a gift. The couple was then considered legally married. Yet the marriage was not consummated until more than a year later, when the final festivities took place. That third step is the context of Jesus' parable. On the day agreed upon, the bridegroom prepares at his parents' house and the bride at her parents'. The bridegroom then processes to the bride's parents' home where the festivities begin. In the evening, the bride and groom walk in procession to the bridegroom's father's house for the wedding banquet. And while they were on the way, those who had been waiting to join the festivities rush out to greet them with torches burning in the dark night. You get the picture. Jesus' story speaks of 10 maidens, maybe bridesmaids, 5 of them wise, having prepared with ample oil to keep their torches lighted, and the same number, silly, foolish, neglected to carry enough oil to last as long as needed. The foolish had to scurry to the store to buy more oil, and when they finally arrived at the banquet, the door was shut. And as they pounded on the door, all they heard was a voice saying, "He didn't know them," and would not open. Because of their neglect to prepare, they missed the party of their lives. And they learned to their sorrow that timing is everything. Jesus' story raises a question which I want to ask today. Is today the time for us to focus on God's party, on God's banquet, on God's call, on the invitation to live in God's fellowship? Is this finally the time? That's where the Holy Spirit is luring us, the Spirit of God's presence in our lives, which has been there from the beginning, from the very beginning. We celebrate that preemptive act of grace at the baptism of infants and young children, as we did for Kevin this morning. Before we're even able to say, "Holy Spirit," we are filled with the divine, merciful love which awaits our response. As God's people, we're called to live out and in that nurturing, loving, serving community of the Holy Spirit. The church where I worship has a pastor, new pastor, as of July 1st. After her arrival this summer, in the August Get Acquainted gathering I attended, following our meal, seated in a circle of chairs, she asked the 15 or so people who'd come to share our experience of God, which had brought us to faith. She allowed that maybe it was one sudden moment, one experience when we knew God in a new and powerful way. Or maybe it was the culmination of growing up in the fellowship of a church. But in short, she wanted to know how each of us had encountered God. Now, picture this. We were there in a small circle to prepare. We were prepared as we went to that gathering to tell her how long we had belonged to that church, or how many children we had, or what we liked about the church. You've been in those times. When, boom, we were looking at a serious, intense face who waited to hear from each of us one of the really personal, powerful, and transforming experiences of our lives. It took my breath away and made me glad that for the first time in years, we were talking about our walk with God. Two things hit me that night. First, nobody tried to sneak out. Somehow, when they arranged the chairs, the circle was pretty tight. And I was ready to get out of there, I'll tell you. But I was sunk too deeply in a comfortable couch, and I couldn't think of any valid reason to leave. And the second surprise was that every one of us could point to an experience, an awareness of God's claim on our lives, a holy claim that becomes a living, life-changing power, an experience that is the beginning, not the end, the beginning of a new life with God, with others, and with ourselves. That's the foundation and heart of faith and the church. The church is not about another meeting, another activity. It's about finding the power of God's loving Spirit who changes head knowledge to heart knowledge. The Holy Spirit whispers to us in our hearts and minds when we ask the Spirit to come, shape me, lead me, heal me, empower me. We sing, Spirit of the living God, fall afresh on me. Melt me, mold me, fill me, use me. Jesus' parable reminds us that our need is to be ready to listen, to hear God's call on our lives when it comes. The work we do every day is one place God calls us, inviting some to be nurses, some doctors, others lawyers, homemakers, teachers, pastors, scientists, engineers, entrepreneurs, and these days we could go on and on and on. Where we work every day is a place that God calls us. We are also moved to respond in other places. God calls us as Christians to run toward the need, even danger, and not run away. Nina Fong was one of two nurses who became infected with Ebola in a Dallas hospital while treating a patient returned from Liberia, Thomas Eric Duncan. And at the time she was asked to take this risky assignment, she was urged by her mother not to go. She was called to the Texas hospital to attend an Ebola patient, and her mother said, "Don't go." And the daughter said, "I'm called. I'm called." The call often comes when uncertainty, even danger, lurks in the shadows of night. Centuries ago, during Earth deathly plagues in Alexandria, Egypt, when many were fleeing, Christians remained in the city, providing 1,500 meals a day to those who were stricken and dying. Last month, during the fatal illness of Thomas Duncan to Ebola, local television stations in Dallas followed every move. As one member of Highland Park United Methodist Church on the campus of Southern Methodist University watched the tragedy unfold, he said, "I've got to do something. I've got to do something." So he rented a house for the family of Mr. Duncan and drove to where the family was living and took them in his car to a new place, free of the virus. The call came to the waiting bridesmaids at night, in the darkness. And much of the time, that's when the call comes, when we may not be expecting or ready. More than 30 years ago, a friend of mine received a phone call every spouse dreads. The hospital said her husband had been in an automobile accident and she should go to the hospital immediately. One thinks the worst when a call like that comes, and it was the worst. At the hospital, she was ushered into a room by herself and told that a doctor would be in to talk to her. At first, she was apprehensive and afraid as she waited. And then something unexpected happened. Calm claimed her. She thought of the need to contact her two high school boys at home to tell them before they saw it on the news. She needed to call her husband's boss. She would need to look at her beloved, only in his mid-40s, to identify him for the authorities. It was a strange and awful time. But while she was alone in that room, an inner voice spoke to her. No words her ears could hear, but God spoke to her, bringing her the conviction that she would be okay. In that place, in that empty hospital room, she was called, and ever since has been claimed by a grace, a love, a hope greater than our minds can comprehend. God's Spirit, God's guiding and sustaining presence assured her that she would be okay. And she has been to this day. Whether by day or by night, that call, that word can transform your life if you trust it.